Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, January 11th, 2024. Marfa EMS to update patient fees, acquire new ambulance. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa City Council members voted to increase fees for EMS services and heard updates on a new ambulance arriving this month during a council meeting held Tuesday. City EMS Director Bert Lagarde presented council members with an updated fee schedule, an outline of costs for services Marfa EMS provides, explaining that fees have not yet been updated in at least 4 years. Lagarde said the increases, which average 20 to 25%, were recommended by the department's billing company, Emergicon. Pretty much all of our billing lines were below the industry standard, said Lagarde. Emergicon recommended Marfa EMS increase its cost for basic life support from $1,200 to $1,400, and its advanced life support, instances where a paramedic is involved and may need to administer an IV, intubate, and more, from $1,250 to $1,600. It was also suggested that Marfa EMS increase its mileage, patient time spent physically riding in the ambulance, from $17.50 to $24 per mile. Marfa EMS will also up its charge for disposable medical materials by $100, amounting to $450 for advanced life support and $350 for basic life support cases. Lagarde said that the changes will primarily impact how their billing company charges Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance for services rendered to patients. However, those not fully covered by insurance or paying out of pocket will be directly impacted by the increased costs. City Manager Mandy Rohn said Marfa EMS saw very few self-pay customers, with most patients utilizing some form of medical insurance. This is what's going through Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance, said Rohn. We're just asking to raise the rates to what Emergicon is suggesting. Councilmember Eddie Payares said he thought that the increases were reasonable, considering how long it had been since fees were updated. Other council members agreed and ultimately voted to approve the increases. Council members decided to continue the city's policy of not charging for treat-no-transport situations where Marfa EMS is called to a home to assess a patient but does not end up transporting them to the hospital. Lagarde said, considering Marfa EMS customers are often elderly, on fixed income, or from out of town, he preferred to evaluate patients at no cost and recommended they take their own vehicle to the hospital if appropriate in order to free up the ambulance for life-threatening emergencies. We would rather catch them actually having something happen and then transport them, as opposed to going over there for a cut finger, said Lagarde. Marfa EMS will also acquire a brand new $230,000 ambulance this month that is being grant-funded with the help of Big Bend Regional Hospital District, the City of Marfa, Presidio County, and the Area Regional Advisory Council that helps support trauma care systems. In a follow-up interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Lagarde said the new ambulance will be outfitted with UV light technology that will allow for ambulances to be easily sterilized, as well as improved seat belts, so EMTs and paramedics have the flexibility to care for patients while in motion, features lacking in the old ambulance. Council members voted to declare the old ambulance, a 2001 Dodge with an obsolete patient care compartment, according to Lagarde, surplus, and will soon put it up for sale. "We just want to get it declared surplus so we can move it out of the way, so when it's time for the shiny new ambulance to show up, it will have a home," said Roan. Favor historical marker vandalized with word colonizer in Shafter. By Rob D'Amico for the Big Bend Sentinel. Shafter. Is it a historical marker vandalized in Shafter last Thursday has left local and state officials pondering what to do about repairing it or possibly moving it to another site and replacing it with something more historically specific to the ghost town south of Marfa. Someone used red spray paint to write colonizer across the bottom of the marker, a gray granite stone erected for rancher Milton Favor in 1936 as part of a series of markers placed around the state celebrating the Texas Centennial. Favor was a Virginian who moved to the Ojinaga area in the 1840s before settling on tracts of land amidst the Chinati and Cienega Mountains in 1857. He eventually established a thriving sheep and cattle trade, and his holdings became the Cibolo Creek Ranch. The colonizer epithet was likely spurred by the marker's notation of Favor having the first Anglo-American ranch in the Big Bend, along with mention of the four forts he built as a defense against hostile Apaches. It's unclear exactly when the marker was vandalized, but reports from Shafter residents say it was likely last Thursday afternoon, with one resident posting a photo of the sign by early evening. The marker sits adjacent to the ruins of mine buildings on Cibolo Creek Road, off the main highway, with no residents living in clear view of it. Some 1,100 Texas Centennial markers dot the state, and although they are different from the new iteration of metal sign markers that began in 1962, together they number more than 17,000, and all are regulated by the Texas Historical Commission. Bob Brinkman, coordinator for the THC's marker program, said the Shafter vandalism spurred a memory of other recent markers hit with spray paint. "Even that exact word, colonizer, I remember it seemed to be part of a series of vandalism that was done years ago," he said. Brinkman recalled painted markers in Llano County, and news reports confirmed that three markers were painted in February 2017. One marker noting the last Indian battle in this region was covered with black paint writing, "White History Celebrates Genocide," while another was shot with bullets, and yet another marked with "Decolonize!" Exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark. "I guess I could look at the picture and do some handwriting analysis, see if it's the same person," Brinkman said. Regardless of whether vandals are ever caught, the incidents set in motion a process to repair the markers, usually a consultation with local historical commission members to assess what to do next, he said. THC doesn't have a budget for repairs, but can sometimes fund funding with its nonprofit arm, Friends of the Texas Historical Commission, or local donors. Rod Pontone, Presidio County Historical Commission chair, also was alerted to the incident and wondered whether some paint thinner might be a simple fix. He said he will be discussing options with the THC. While unfortunate, he said the vandalism at least comes at a time when there's an opportunity to offer a better historical perspective of the area, particularly near the giant boulders north of Shafter, known and marked with a highway sign as Elephant Rock. Many local historians, particularly those focused on early inhabitants in the region, think the rocks look more like a bison. I've been talking to the marker people with the Texas Historical Commission, Fonton said, and they're talking about wanting to put up a marker at Elephant Rock that talks about how Elephant Rock is really Cibolo Rock. The Cibolo were a group of indigenous people and eventually part of a Humano clan that settled in the area just north of and around Shafter. Cibolo translates to bison for some Spanish speakers, but the exact origin of the word is unknown. Ponton said the logical thing to do is move the favor marker closer to Cibolo Creek Ranch, erect a Cibolo marker, then get approval for another marker for Shafter that speaks more to its specific history, including mining. Brinkman said the content of historical markers like the Favor Memorial can be changed. But since the centennial markers like these are usually short in content and intended to just mark a place, there's often a better way to more accurately portray historical context with the newer markers or full installations of signage. Vandalism carries a charge from a Class C to a Class A misdemeanor, depending on the damage. But since markers are state property, perpetrators can be charged with a state jail felony. Presidio County Sheriff's Deputy Marco Baiza said he will be investigating the incident. Photo by Rob D'Amico. A historical marker was vandalized with the word colonizer in Shafter last Thursday, leaving local and state officials pondering what to do about repairing it or possibly moving it to another site. Marfa ISD receives preliminary approval for a $310,000 state-funded school security grant by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa ISD will receive $310,000 in grant funding from the Texas Education Agency, TEA, this school year for facilities enhancements in order to bolster school security, according to preliminary approvals released by the agency in November. The Safety and Facilities Enhancement, SAFE, SAFE, grant comes from a recent $1.1 billion appropriation from the Texas legislature to help schools meet newly established standards for school security. New minimum security requirements were adopted by the TEA in 2023 in light of recent events, including the 2022 mass shooting at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde that claimed the lives of 19 students and two teachers. The first cycle of the grant will award around $800 million to Texas school districts for the 2023-2024 school year. An additional $279.5 million will be allocated in a second cycle later this year. Marfa ISD, which submitted a needs assessment to the TEA last August, was awarded a significant sum in the first round of SAFE funding compared to other local school districts. Presidio ISD, the only other school district in the county which serves a far greater number of students, received $231,000. Nearby Alpine ISD was awarded around $75,400 in SAFE grant funds, which the district will use for fencing, said Superintendent Michelle Reinhardt. She said the state's criteria for what the funds can be used for was fairly restrictive, and she hopes a forthcoming second cycle of funding will have more flexibility so that districts can locally determine how to use much-needed security funding to meet their needs. Interim Superintendent Arturo Alferez said Marfa ISD intends to spend the money on silent panic alert buttons and keyless entry doors for each classroom, fortification of windows by installing a bulletproof film or glaze and additional security cameras, all of which meet grant requirements. Alferez said the district will have to see how much they can afford to buy with the $310,000, but it is likely, given how costly some of its wish items are, additional funds will be needed. When it comes down to school safety, there's never enough, said Alferez. I'm pretty sure we're going to go through this grant, and we're going to realize, oh, we need this. When it comes down to student safety, you just can't put a price on that, he added. State funds may not stretch as far for rural districts like Marfa ISD, said Alferez, given the fact that they often have to attract vendors from farther away, involving added costs. Being a remote rural school district makes it even more expensive because you have to contract with vendors either coming from El Paso, coming from Lubbock, or coming from Midland, said Alferez. Alferez, who is managing a district that adopted a $1 million-plus deficit budget this year, echoed Reinhardt's sentiments that the state funding an influx of state aid is sorely needed in other areas in addition to school security. Marfa ISD's school cafeteria is in dire need of a new HVAC unit, and COVID relief funds that are helping pay salaries will soon run out. Marfa ISD recently put an ill-fated $57 million bond package up for a public vote in order to build a new K-12 school, citing inadequate, rapidly deteriorating facilities. Despite those continued challenges, upgrading the district's existing facilities in the name of student safety is money well spent, said Alferez. School safety is always going to be a priority, and it doesn't matter what era of education we're in. If kids do not feel safe here in school, then learning is not going to happen, said Alferez. Alferez said the district hopes to tackle the new security upgrades made possible by the SAFE grant this spring. Any additional security cameras will join the district's existing system of 37 cameras installed in the fall of 2022. In addition to the security cameras, which the district is leasing for $81,000 for 5 years, the district hired its first full-time armed school resource officer around a year ago. Alferez said the school safety committee, which will ideally be made up of area law enforcement officers, teachers, administrators, principals, students, and parents, will begin meeting more regularly soon, and he is seeking additional members to help guide the district in how it can improve security. If they're serving as a teacher, if they're serving as a parent, if they're serving as a first responder, it's always good to have different eyes, said Alferez.
Hi, it's Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, January 11th, 2024. City amends wrecker service ordinance. The Fort Stockton City Council amended a portion of a wrecker service ordinance at its January 8th meeting, specifically Chapter 25 of the ordinance regarding wrecker service rotation lists. The original ordinance stated that if somebody gets in a vehicle collision and the vehicle is not drivable, the police officer would ask the driver to designate a licensed incident management towing company to remove the vehicle. The language was removed from the ordinance. A wrecker rotation list is kept at police dispatch, and the next rotation wrecker is sent to the scene. During the public comment portion of the meeting, before the item was discussed by the council, Lucas Macias with Affordable Towing said he had been trying to set up a meeting with council members and Chief Velasquez, but it's fallen on deaf ears. Now, all of a sudden, this ordinance is trying to be changed without our approval, without being consulted, nothing, Macias said. It's just being forced down our throat. Basically, what it's saying is citizens of Fort Stockton don't have a right to choose their record service. Macias said that previously officers could not directly or indirectly recommend a service at an accident scene, and he asked if officers were now going to recommend services. Mayor Casillas told Macias that the public comment portion of the meeting is to make a statement and not ask questions of the council. I want to know if you all are going to pass this, if we're going to have a chance to discuss this, or is it just being ignored? Basically, what I want to know is the city of Fort Stockton going to do this? Casillas added that when the item comes up, the council will discuss and vote on the item. Rose Macias also spoke to the council and asked that the council not accept the changes to the ordinance due to the fact that you're going to be taking the citizens of Fort Stockton's right away to choose which record service they want. They should have a right to choose. The problem is not with the owner's request. The problem is with the vehicle, police department and dispatch, adding that they shouldn't be penalized because something that this lets happen within the department. Garcia said the change to the ordinance does not affect the council, but affects the companies providing the service. There's nobody better to tell you the problems that we're having but the record services themselves. We should be included in the decision and spoken with trying to solve the problem, not you taking somebody's rights away and thinking that's going to resolve the problem. The problem's going to keep on happening if you do that. Police Chief Velasquez addressed the council and discussed the reasoning for the change and said it's a state law requirement. State law indicates that there are only two types of tows, consent tows and non-consent tows. So what we've been doing up to now has been wrong. So you have two types of tows that we had listed under our ordinance, which were in a violation of state law. The change of the ordinance removes the following language. It shall be unlawful for a police officer at the scene of a collision to directly or indirectly recommend to any person the name of any towing company or to influence or attempt to influence in any manner the decision of any person choosing a wrecker. Velasquez said the rotation prevents conflict of interest of an officer recommending a towing company. Council member Darian Hodges asked if it was legal for the driver of a vehicle involved in an accident to call a tow truck. If that's on the roadway, if it's an incident management tow and you have no consent, Velasquez said, adding that the police are controlling the scene under the state law. The only way you can do a consent tow is if you happen to be off the roadway and nothing occurred while it was on the roadway. Council member Bernal asked if the Walmart parking lot and Velasquez asked about the Walmart parking lot, and Velasquez responded that those are considered private property tows, which fall under the non-consent tows, and the property owner can have a vehicle towed in that case. If there's a fender bender on private property and a vehicle cannot be moved, the city police are not required to work that crash, but the Fort Stockton police does as a courtesy. Velasquez added that if a crash takes place on private property, the vehicle owner can call whatever tow company they want. The council unanimously passed the changes to the ordinance. County approves contract for aerial hunting. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court raced through a 26-item agenda in 45 minutes Monday morning, approving a contract for aerial hunting management through the USDA Wildlife Services. The court approved the bid submitted by Concho Aviation, and the contract is valid for 2 years, ending December 31, 2025. Commissioner Tom Chapman asked for the contract to be for 2 years, and it was listed as just 1 year on the contract, and the motion was made to amend the contract to 2 years. County Attorney Lacey asked if the original bid approved was for 2 years, and Chapman said that it was. In addition to predator control, the county may call Concho Aviation to assist with other search and rescue operations, such as lost or injured people within Pecos County. The county will pay Concho Aviation $360 per hour for each hour their R-22 helicopter is airborne, and $600 per hour for each hour the R-44 helicopter is in flight, and the pilot and gunner are hunting game or providing search and rescue operations with a minimum of 2.5 hours per day of operation. In other action, the court approved renewal of a lease agreement between the county and Texas A&M Forest Service for land use and emergency facilities for fire surveillance and firefighting activities. The court approved a mileage rate of 67 cents per mile, which is the standard IRS rate. They approved the purchase of a motor and pump for the Imperial water tank in Precinct 4 using contingency funds. They approved a request from Precinct 1 to purchase Multi-Pet Pro sprayer, one Groundmaster mower, one ProPass top dresser for Workman HD, one ProForce debris blower, one Triflex 3300 accessories, and one Sousco greens roller to be paid for from golf course budgeted funds. Approved a request from Precinct 1 to purchase a John Deere tractor, one crew cab, one Ford crew cab, one entire trailer lowboy, one belly dump, one Caterpillar, one haul truck to be paid from road and bridge number 1 budgeted funds. Voted to allow Precinct 1 to paint the inside and outside of the Pecos County Precinct Commissioner's Office and Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Building to be paid from Park 1 budgeted funds. The court voted to allow Precinct 1 to paint the livestock barn to be paid from Park 1 budgeted funds. The court voted to approve a request from Precinct 1 to replace flooring for the Senior Citizens Building to be paid for from budgeted funds. The court voted to approve a request from Precinct 2 to purchase 2 Skag mowers, 1 John Deere Gator, and to be paid for from budgeted funds. Voted to approve a request from Precinct 2 to purchase 4 commercial ceiling fans for the large community hall to be paid for from park budgeted funds. Approved a request from Precinct 3 to purchase 1 crew cab to be paid from Sheffield Water budgeted funds. Allowed SCADA Systems, LLC, to begin the irrigation improvements for the outside pump house in Precinct 3, Park Golf. Approved a request from Precinct 4 to purchase 1 skid steer planer, 1 crew cab work truck, 1 IT truck with utility bed and boxes to be paid from road and bridge funds. Approved a request from Pecos County Sheriff's Office to purchase 3 F-150 pickups and 1 Chevy transport van from Byboard to be reimbursed by Operation Lone Star Grant Program, and approved Pecos County easement abandonment to alleyway from Joshua Duckett in Imperial. City renames street in honor of the Hodges family and sets spring cleanup dates. The Hodges family has a long storied history in Fort Stockton, and the City Council has taken steps to ensure the name lives on. The city created the Hodges Pavilion adjacent to the Fort Stockton Convention Center in 2023 in honor of Delman Hodges, and at Monday's council meeting renamed a portion of West 17th Street from I-10 Access Road to Marshall Street between Candlewood Suites and Hampton Inn, Hodges Parkway, in honor of Hodges. Hodges was a deputy tax assessor, county clerk, and a county judge who passed away in 2021. Councilman Reuben Falcon asked for the item to be placed on the agenda for consideration as a way of thanking the Hodges family for their service to the community and their donations. The item was unanimously approved, with Councilman Darren Hodges abstaining. In other action, the council set the dates for the annual spring cleanup. The city's been divided into 4 zones. Zone 1 will be January 22 through February 2. Zone 2 will be February 5 through February 16th. Zone 3 will be March 4th through the 15th, and Zone 4 will be April 8th through the 10th. The last day to accept trash at the old landfill will be Saturday, January 13th. We're doing something new this year, only to relieve a lot of the pickup from our Public Works Department. Roll-offs will be available, but the city has not identified these locations. Acceptable items for bulk waste pickup include tree limbs less than 4 inches, tree trunks, stumps, or root balls less than 4 inches or 50 pounds, furniture and small appliances, and tires. Bulk waste shall be limited to a total volume less than 4 feet by 3 feet by 8 feet. Items not acceptable for pickup include construction debris, hazardous chemicals, dead animals. Items must be placed in the alley no sooner than 10 days before scheduled collection in your zone, and the items must be placed as close to the residence as possible so as not to block traffic in the alley. Held a public hearing and approved Ordinance 24-100, a specific use permit for replacement of a manufactured mobile home in a one-family dwelling, District 4, adjacent to Williams Street. Approved resolution authorizing the city of Fort Stockton to file a grant application with the Office of the Governor, e-grants program, for e-body-worn cameras for the police department. Approved appointment of Jerome Chavez to the Pecos County Appraisal District Board of Directors. Appointed Lawson Kemp to replace Veronica Lopez, who resigned from the Planning and Zoning Commission. During the public comment portion of the meeting, Ember Renteria addressed the council to ask how an item can be placed on an agenda for council consideration. The city's rule is that the public can only comment on items currently on the agenda and not ask questions of the council. When Mayor Casillas asked Renteria what agenda item she wanted to speak about, she said it was the agenda itself. It has to be an agenda item, Casillas said, asking for guidance with the city manager, Frank Rodriguez, reiterating that a citizen must comment on an existing agenda item. I'd like to know, how does an item get on the agenda, Renteria said. What's the policy and the procedure for that? Myself and the community members would like to know. Rodriguez told Renteria that he would be happy to discuss it with her on Tuesday, January 9th. She has been vocal on social media regarding the closing of Panther Pictures by the city, and the council chamber Monday was filled with supporters of the theater, which closed December 31st, though Panther Pictures was not named and nobody else spoke regarding that matter. Casillas did say that members of the city council asked for items to be placed on the agenda. Dear Editor, in Bible prophecy, there is no mention or hint of the existence of the USA. Could it be that the Democrat Marxists are going to destroy the USA? Some 10 million illegal aliens from all over the world have invaded our country the last 3 years. 18 Border Patrol agents have committed suicide. Our southwest border is gross chaos, mayhem, and pandemonium. Hey, can you let a crisis go to waste? Democrats in New York are registering illegal aliens in the shelters as Democrats. They will probably mail out millions and millions of unsolicited ballots. Why? Perhaps to steal another election? I pray they won't succeed. Signed, George Pitts. Dear Editor, the freshwater aquifers and rivers of Texas are in danger, in particular the Pecos River and the aquifers underlying the Permian Basin. I own a ranch on the Pecos River in Crockett County, and the health of the Pecos and the underlying aquifers is very important to me personally and should be important to all Texans, as the problems along the Pecos are not confined to West Texas. The Friends of the Pecos is a group formed to protect the Pecos River, and I am a member. This group recently toured Shiloh Wright's ranch and much of the surrounding area near Imperial. Our tour included the huge Bomer Lake that was formed and is continuously filled by an unplugged and abandoned oil well that is flowing brine water to the surface from the Artesian San Andreas Formation. For the record, this brine is a toxic mix from which no plant or animal can be watered. The land is saturated. The land it saturates is dead forever. We started our tour on Farm to Market 1053, where an improperly cased injection well has caused an immense sinkhole, which has in turn caused 1053 to collapse and require massive repairs. Currently, rather than continuing to try and patch the road, TxDOT is planning on rerouting the highway miles to the east. On Schuyler's Ranch, we were first taken to the Santa Rosa Spring, which used to flow 1,200 gallons per minute of fresh water prior to 2017, when oil companies to the south began pumping massive amounts of fresh water for fracking horizontal wells. This massive pumping of fresh water has also dried up the seepage springs that were a major source of water for the Pecos River, causing a long segment of the river between Farm to Market 1776 Bridge and the Farm to Market 1053 Bridge to be dry. Schuyler showed us some of the 295 unplugged orphan wells that are on his ranch. Years ago, some oil producers walked off and left these wells with the pump jacks and sucker rods and tubing in place. Since the San Andreas Formation in this region is artesian and very corrosive, it has caused brine water leaks in the casing that are flowing to the surface. These leaks are causing groundwater contamination that could easily migrate into the Pecos River. Left unplugged, all of these wells have the potential to become like the out-of-control well at Bomer Lake. Schuyler has repeatedly tried to get the Texas Railroad Commission to plug these orphan wells before they get totally out of control. Currently, there are 13 orphan wells on his ranch alone that are flowing significant volumes of brine water to the surface. To date, he has only gotten the RRC to plug one of these wells. Also, there's a well that was drilled in 1969 in search of sulfur. It was improperly plugged and is flowing a weak stream of brackish water onto the surface. Schuyler has made this problem known to the RRC and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality and has not been able to get it plugged. It is contaminating the surface and the groundwater aquifers and has the ability to become another Bomer Lake as well. In addition, there are a dozen abandoned oil wells located within the Pecos River. Schuyler showed us one well in the dried-up stream bed that has rotten casing that has the potential to break loose and start flowing San Andreas brine directly into the Pecos River. These orphan wells must be properly plugged before they destroy the aquifers and the Pecos River. Fresh water in Texas is a precious commodity that should not be wasted either through neglect, as with these many orphan wells, or through waste by using it to frack oil wells when produced water could realistically be recycled for fracking. We must take better care of our aquifers. All of our lives depend on a good supply of fresh water. Please contact your state reps and senators in Austin and demand that these problems be resolved. Signed, Luke Ship, Iran.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, January 4th. New law requires voters to request application for ballot by mail. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Ward County Clerk Denise Valle told the news Wednesday morning, according to a new state law passed in 2022, voters who are eligible for mail-in ballots need to call her office and request an application. Quote, "We can't just send them out to whoever has voted by mail in the past like we have before. The voter must call and request the application," Valle said. Normally, by this time of year, the office sees 40 to 50 applications for mail-in ballots. Quote, "We only have two in our office as of right now, so I'm afraid some voters may not be aware of the new requirement," she added. The law, known as SB 1, was enacted by lawmakers last year to further tighten voting procedures in the state. SB 1 also includes new ID requirements, which requires absentee voters to include a state identification number, like a driver's license number, or, if they don't have a driver's license, a partial Social Security number, both when requesting a mail-in ballot and when returning a completed ballot. Those numbers must match information in a voter's record for ballot requests to be accepted and votes to be counted. To be eligible to vote by mail, the voter must be 65 years of age or older, be sick or disabled, be out of the county on election day and during the period for early voting by personal appearance, or be expected to give birth within 3 weeks before or after election day, or be confined in jail but otherwise eligible. Applications for a ballot by mail are provided on the Ward County website, and voters must designate a party on the application. Quote, when filling out the application, the applicant has to select either Republican or Democratic Party and mark it on the application. We can't just assume the party for them, Valle said. The last day to request an application is February 23rd. Valle can be reached at 432-943-3294. Powell, one of many to teach sports to Egyptian students last summer. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Monahans High School graduate Noah Powell, son of Chris and Krista Powell, spent this past summer with a Baptist youth group touring small Texas towns, teaching Vacation Bible School, and traveling to Egypt to teach sports to a group of Egyptian junior high school age students. The 7-member Midland First Baptist Church recreation team, ranging in age from 18 to 22 years old, began their summer VBS tour by visiting Lawn, just outside Tuscaloosa, Brackettville, Monahans, and finishing up in Pretty. The group spent a week in each town for children ages kindergarten through 6th grade to have the opportunity to participate in Bible study, games, exercise classes, and general socializing with the team. Powell was the preacher and leader of the Vacation Bible School in the park, while the team spent a week in Monahans during June. The VBS tour ended the last week in June with the week-long visit to Pretty before the group traveled to Egypt to participate in a 2-week sports program for the local non-Muslim school students. Quote, non-Muslim students are not allowed to play school sports. Only Muslim students have that privilege. A baby born in Egypt has a birth certificate that is stamped as Muslim or non-Muslim that follows them their whole life, making them ineligible to play school sports, Powell said. The REC team left for Egypt on July 12th, and after getting settled at the sports camp, spent the first 2 days sightseeing in Cairo and the surrounding area, which is home to more than 262,000 of Egypt's poorest inhabitants, mostly Coptic Christians. One of the areas on the edge of Cairo is a slum area named Manshiyat Nasser. It is Cairo's main destination for garbage collectors, the Zabalin, who bring Cairo's rubbish there for people to start work on recycling it. The area has poor living conditions and rubbish almost everywhere, from over the streets to on the roofs of houses. In addition, there is a lack of basic infrastructure such as sewers, electricity, and water. It covers around 5.54 square kilometers and lies at the base of Mokattam Hill and has a complete economy that depends on the collecting and recycling of rubbish. The origin of Cairo's garbage cities, Zabalin, goes back to farmers who started to migrate from Upper Egypt in the 1940s as a result of poverty and poor harvest. Initially, they started by raising animals like pigs, chickens, and goats. Then they ended up collecting and sorting the city's garbage as they found it more profitable. St. Simon Church, or the Cave Church, is the largest church in the Middle East and is located in Garbage City. This is the church used by the Coptic Christians. Established in 1975, with seating for more than 15,000 worshipers, the cave church is fantastically carved out of rock and is mostly used by the Garbage City's Christians. The Coptic Christian population is one of the oldest religious groups in existence, tracing its roots back to St. Mark in Alexandria, soon after the ascension of Christ during the reign of the Roman Emperor Claudius, around 42 AD. On day 3 of the journey, the team members were assigned the sport each would be in charge of teaching. The sports camp concept was created to give the non-Muslim Egyptian students a chance to learn and participate in sports of their choosing. Quote, "I was assigned to coach American football, more like flag football, while some of the others coached basketball, baseball or softball, ultimate frisbee, pickleball, and volleyball," Powell said. He added, quote, "We also had 4 Egyptian counselors who coached soccer and dodgeball with the students, as well as 7 from Midland Classical Academy High School who joined us there to help out," end quote. The REC team had junior high school age students at the full-blown summer camp for 6 days and nights. These students had Egyptian high schoolers who served as dorm overseers during the camp stay. These high schoolers were equivalent to chaperones and attended all functions with the students. Quote, "Each student signed up for a sport at the beginning of the week, and that is the sport they did all week," he said. All in all, the camp hosted approximately 300 students who participated in the summer sports program. These students, ranging in age from 12 to 14 years old, were broken down into groups by age and gender. A language barrier wasn't an issue for members of the REC team. Quote, "They are all fluent in English and Arabic. Some of the boys would be speaking Arabic, and in the middle of the sentence, an American bad word could be heard," Powell laughed. "Teenagers are basically the same worldwide," end quote. Along with the sports participation, the groups attended Christian worship classes, which were taught in the Arabic language. At camp, campers are divided in cabins of 12 campers each, along with 2 full-time counselors who are trained to take care of campers in all different situations. Quote, "The schedule is built to teach campers to compete and challenge themselves physically by stretching themselves in different sports and socially by meeting new people and building their character," Powell said. "They compete as cabins and as individuals in different sports and activities daily so that they can learn to compete in a healthy environment and play alongside different teams." Quote, "We didn't teach the worship classes. That was our free time to peruse our own interest, but we ended each sports session with a devotional. In reality, we only coached them about an hour and a half a day. The rest of the day was spent in camp-wide activities, such as games, and lots of time spent in the huge swimming pool. It was very hot, so the pool was a welcome part of every day," Powell said. A chow hall served 3 meals a day to the students, coaches, and chaperones. Quote, "We ate lots of beans, chicken strips, rice, and veggies, but we even had tacos a couple of times. There was a group from the camp that came to Texas one time. They ate at Torchy's Tacos, and now they cook tacos there at the camp," Powell said. The camp administration workers come to Texas every year and meet with the people at Red River Ministries in Austin. The camp program is accepted by the local Arabic government and allowed to be held each summer. Wadi Sports Camp is a Christian ministry of KDEC targeting youth through camps at Bait El Wadi since 2003. "We aim to reflect life with Jesus in a genuine, honest atmosphere where the campers can truly understand how to live and enjoy life with God. We strive to make camp the most fun and healthy environment for your children. Parents of the attendees pay a fee for their child to attend, much like any summer camp in the U.S., he said. Powell took Lobo baseball caps with him to give away, along with a lot of footballs and other sports-related prizes to the groups who were most improved at the end of the week. Quote, I was teaching quarterback position, which we had to teach from the ground up. They have no working knowledge to build on, just what they have possibly seen on television. This was an amazing experience. The kids would ask why we were doing what we do, and we told them, to teach you sports and to teach you about Jesus and how he loves you, Powell said. Commissioners award Caliche fuel bids. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners met Wednesday morning for a very brief last meeting of 2023 at the Ward County Courthouse, beginning the meeting with a declaration of a quorum being present. Commissioners were seeking bids to supply caliche and materials for upcoming county road work. The court only received one bid for caliche from Carrie Anthony of Monahans. Anthony bid $4 a yard for pit-run caliche, which means the county uses their trucks and crews to load and transport the caliche from the owner's pit and takes it to their work location. Bids for road materials and road work were not received. It wasn't clear if the county would seek other bids at a later time. The county did receive one bid for bulk fuel and fuel cards from Southwest Marketers. The bid came in at the final price on unleaded fuel for $2.31 and diesel at $2.38. The package includes fuel and cards for the county. Both submitted bids were approved. In regular business, the court approved paying the county bills, which included Ward County payroll fund totaling $398,000, indigent legal care attorneys for a total of $2,300, county clerk supplies totaling $281, sheriff's supplies for $566, jail expense supplies for $1,100, indigent health care ward memorial totaling $72,600, the Piute Community Center was for supplies in the amount of $96. Also, the previous meeting's minutes were approved. The county and hospital budget amendments were approved as well as the officer's report. Present at the meeting were Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez, Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, and Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, who presided over the meeting in the absence of Ward County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be on Monday, January 8th, in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen, at 9:30 a.m. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Gray being held on $10,000 bond. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans woman is currently being held on a $10,000 bond after she was allegedly seen on surveillance camera damaging her neighbor's air conditioner unit. Monahans Police Department officers were in the 1,000 block of South Bruce Street on December 20th around 10:30 a.m. in reference to a follow-up regarding an RV fire at 1003 South Bruce the previous day. Officers were in the area checking surveillance camera footage in an effort to see if they could identify how the RV fire started. According to Chief of Police Christopher Quintana, quote, While reviewing the surveillance footage, officers observed Johanna Pinkel Gray, age 54, of 1003 South Bruce, pick up a metal object and strike her neighbor's mini-split air conditioner unit, breaking it. End quote. The camera is located on the neighbor's property and faces his property and alleyway. Gray fled the scene after hitting the unit with the metal object. A warrant was obtained for Gray, and she was subsequently picked up on the warrant on December 31st. She was taken to Ward County Jail, charged with criminal mischief, more than $2,500, less than $30,000. Gray has not been charged related to the fire which consumed the RV and garage on her property. At the time, authorities said they weren't sure what started the two separate fires. Gray was on scene when officials arrived on December 19th, and this is the fourth time members of the Monahans Volunteer Fire Department have been called to the property regarding a major fire. In January, Gray was arrested on second-degree felony arson charges after fire officials said an accelerant was used near the condemned home. The home first caught fire in May 2021. Fire officials said at the time the fire was believed to have begun in the kitchen by the back door. The fire was so hot that it broke every window in the house and the roof collapsed. Flames were coming out in all directions and consumed the whole home very quickly. Since the first fire, Gray has been staying on the property in an RV travel trailer, which fire officials were called out to in July 2022 after clothes in the RV caught fire. In November 2022, council members determined the burnt home on the property was unsafe and may not be feasibly repaired, and Gray was given 10 days to clear everything out of the home and off the property and to demolish the structure. Because Gray didn't comply with the court order, the city stepped in and demolished the home and obtained a lien on the property for the cost of the demolition. If convicted, Gray could face a prison sentence of 2 to 20 years in prison and a fine up to $10,000. She is also facing prison time after being indicted in August on charges of driving while intoxicated for a third time, a third-degree felony. Gray has not been to trial on any of her pending charges. Resolution run, slated January 13th. The Monahans Sandhills 5K, 10K run and health walk is scheduled Saturday, January 13th. Registration begins at 8 a.m., with a required $25 entry fee and run start time set for 9 a.m. Resolution Run t-shirts are on a first-come, first-served basis. The competition is in three categories, a 5K, 10K, and 1 mile health walk. Prizes will be awarded in three places for 12-year-olds and under, boys and girls in 12 years and up, male and female in the 5K, 10K, and health walk. Competitors walking or running must clear the course by 11 a.m. Pets are allowed to walk or run with their owner if they are on a leash. For additional information or to register, contact the Monahans Chamber of Commerce at 943-2187 or visit them at the Ward County Events Center located at 1525 East Monahans Parkway.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.